Reading from Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, from chapter 2, section 1. And this is the beginning of Sadhana Bhakti. Yata saptame tasmat kenapyupayena mana krishne niveshayet. This is one line from 8th canto, chapter 1, verse 31. Seventh canto. And somehow Rupa Goswami wants to extract this one line to explain a point about sadhana bhakti. It behooves everybody to apply his mind to Sri Krishna in whatsoever way he can. So that's the line. So he's about to introduce sadhana bhakti, and he'll explain all the different types of sadhana bhakti. And then the 64 limbs of sadhana bhakti, which apply both to Raghunuga and Vaidhi. But then, before he starts all that differentiation, he establishes the main principle, mana krishne niveshayat, that our mind should always be fixed on Krishna. This is uttam bhakti. This is what it's all about. So, in commenting on the above verse, Jiva Goswami points out that the meaning of the text is that one must apply one's mind not out of fear or animosity. One's mental interest in the Lord may be one or the other of a non-antagonistic interest or an affectionate concern or an interest dictated by the motive of self-gratification in keeping with one's individual temperamental preference. He rules out any interest in the Lord dictated by animosity and fear. Earlier we read that these demons, they were also, they attained Krishna because their minds were absorbed, but out of envy and fear. So Jiva is saying that actually we should be favorably thinking of the Lord. Jiva points out that mananivesh, which means application of the mind, includes the upalakshana, or extension of meaning, such relevant activities of the physical senses, such as archana, worship of the deities in the temple with flowers, prostrating one's body before the deities in the temple or the spiritual master, which are all forms of sadhana bhakti. Mukunda Das Goswami, he comments on this word manonivesh, which means fixation of the mind. He says, where there is fixation of the mind, despite even animosity, interest in the Lord brings on sayuja mukti, in other words, merging in the Godhead. So you may have your mind fixed on the Lord, but it may be out of hatred or envy, like Shishupal and then Kamsa. So they got Sayuja Mukti. Kamsa was, as a matter of fact, aware of his previous birth as Nemi and his envy of the Lord. So when he cherished animosity against Krishna, his mind was absorbed in Krishna, knowing full well that he was the Supreme Lord. The mere fact of one's animosity towards the Lord, without mental absorption in him, does not entitle one to Sayuja Mukti. Someone may be hateful towards the Lord, but if his mind is not absorbed in him, then he won't get to perfection. In this example I mentioned, King Vena cherished animosity towards the Lord, but he lacked mental absorption in him, so he went to hell. Kamsa and Shishupal incurred sins for their abuse of Krishna, but those sins were washed away because of their complete mental absorption in him, which was lacking in the case of King Vena. So that's what we were saying yesterday, like the elephant, he gets all dirty in the mud, then he goes in the lake and gets cleaned off, and then he goes again and gets dirty. So they're hateful and saying so many bad things, but then they're thinking of Krishna, so that thinking purifies the sin or offense of their bad thoughts or speech. And they thought more of Krishna than they did speak badly, so they ended up becoming purified and eligible for mukti. So now, next verse. Vaidhi Raghunuga Cheti Sadvida Sananvida. He says, sadhana bhakti is two types, Raghunuga and Vaidhi. Now he talks about Vaidhi. Yacha Raghanu Vaptavat Pravrittiru Pajayate Shashane Naiva Shastrasya Savhaidhi Bhakti Ruchyate. When sadhana bhakti is not aroused in the heart of an individual from spontaneous love or liking for it, but it is inspired by injunctions of the scriptures, that's called Vaidhi Bhakti. In other words, when we have a natural liking for serving Krishna, doing the limbs of bhakti, that's considered to be there's some rag there. We really want to do it. We like to do it. But when we're doing it because it's our duty or the scriptures are telling us, and we have faith in the scriptures or faith in the guru, and we say, well, he said we should do it. Prabhupada said, so we do it. I remember in the early days, oftentimes devotees would use this phrase. Well, why are we doing this? Well, Prabhupada said. Okay, well, Prabhupada said, well, then we should do it. Because we had faith in Prabhupada. And of course, also, he was only saying what the scriptures are saying. So Jiva Goswami says, this: the inspiration, the cause of one's action, determines whether he's practicing Vaidhi or Raghunoga Sadhana. If the cause for one's action is simply faith in Shastra and a sense of duty or submission to Guru or the authority of Shastra, then that's called Vaidhi. But if he's doing it because he wants to, he actually has a liking and attraction for it, then it's considered to be the cause of Rag or Raghunuga Bhakti Sadhana. Jiva Goswami, his commentary, he says that when the injunctions of the Shastra alone are the cause of sadhana, and it does not follow from a longing for it, then it's called Vaidhi, which means regulated by the Vidhi, or the rules of scripture. The word rag means simple liking, not in the case of rag in terms of prema bhakti, sneha man, pranaya rag, anurag. That's like an intense state of loving attachment. It just means a liking. You actually like to chant Krishna's name. You like to worship him. You like to get up early and see him in the temple. The difference, and then later on it points out the differences later in this book. When sadhana bhakti arises out of a longing or liking for it, such sadhana bhakti with rag or taste may be functioning within the limits prescribed by the shastras. And if so, it is partially Vaidhi bhakti. So sometimes we're practicing Vaidhi bhakti, but we get some taste and we're getting some kind of mood of wanting to do it. So it's not really rag, pure Raghunuga sadhana, but it's like a mixture. Vakunda Das points out that when sadhana bhakti does not arise out of any spontaneous longing for it, but when it is definitely governed by injunctions of the scriptures, in which one's whims or individual fancies have no place, it's called Vaidhi. Vishnu Chakravarti explains, the inclination for sadhana bhakti can be due either to a love for it or the directions of the scriptures. So here we're discussing these two types of sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana and Raghunuga. So the inclination, we're inclined to do it because we have faith, we're religious, we're pious, we believe in God, we believe in the authority of scriptures, so we submit ourselves to that. It makes sense, it's logical, it's reasonable. We're convinced, someone preaches to us and we're convinced of the need to serve God in so many different ways and surrender to him. So out of faith, and due to preaching and conviction and study, then we surrender and start engaging in the yoga sadhana. But we may not like it. We don't have any attraction maybe for it very much. So that's Vaidhi. So he's saying that it's either due to a love for it or the direction of the scriptures, Vishwanath. But where there is no taste or longing for it, the sadhana bhakti is caused entirely by scriptural injunctions. It is called Vaidhi sadhana. That is sadhana regulated by shastras. Use of the word rag means a longing or taste for sadhana bhakti, which is caused by seeing of deities in the temple or listening to the glories of divine pastimes of the Lord. This is very, very rare, actually. It may be due to last life, if someone was practicing bhakti on the level of Raghunuga bhakti, sadhana bhakti, or he somehow... In this life, he associated with a very advanced devotee who was speaking Harikatha. And by hearing his Harikatha from that advanced devotee, this rag was injected into his heart, this kind of attraction. He heard some class, well, this is very nice. These glories of Krishna are very attractive, very sweet. I want to serve him. So just by hearing about the sweetness of Krishna's glories or the humor, the ras, the flavor, then one gets inspiration or inclination. Yes, I'd like to serve this person. There's no logic there. There's no reason there. There's no scriptural injunctions telling him human life is meant for self-realization. you should surrender to God, don't waste your life. It's simply just the sweetness and attract and beauty of Krishna. And these two causes, Vishnu says, either seeing the beautiful deity in the temple, oh, this deity, oh, so beautiful, come and see the temple of Radha and Krishna. So then someone goes there and says, oh, they're so beautiful. Who is this? Oh, this is Krishna. He's the Lord. You know, we're all serving him. Oh, I want to. He looks so beautiful. I want to serve him too. That's rare. That's really rare. Most people say, what is it? It's a doll, a statue. What is this? You know, this is not. No one's desire. So that seeing the deity or hearing this Harikatha from an advanced devotee that can create such a response in a conditioned soul, generally because he's had some previous contact with sadhana bhakti or even rag bhakti. So specifically, Vishnu says that one can develop this longing or taste for sadhana bhakti, which means the eligibility to practice raganuga sadhana bhakti, simply by seeing the deities in the temple or by hearing the sweet glories and pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto, specifically, it says. But because there's so much sweetness there. And the whole Bhagavatam is very attractive. But when Shukadeva Goswami came out of the womb of his mother as Vyasadeva's son, and he ran off into the forest, he was a Brahmavadi. He didn't want anything to do with this world. He was merged in his spiritual identity, Aham Brahmasmi. And then Vyasadeva sent some of his students there, and they recited some verses. They were just chanting verses from the 10th canto. And when they recited one verse, Barhapitam, starts up Barhapitam, it describes the beauty of Krishna. He has a peacock feather in his hair, a top knot, and a Pitambara Dodi, and he's standing in threefold form. A very beautiful verse from Bhagavatam, describing the physical beauty of Krishna's transcendental body. It was from 10th canto. So when Sukadeva, he was off somewhere in the forest, he heard that verse, he was, oh, who is this? This is so much. Sounds very beautiful, very attractive. So he ran to those, came out to those devotees. He said, what are you chanting? Oh, these are shlokas from Vrindavan Leela. And he said, oh, this is very nice. Where can I hear more? Well, your father will tell you more. Come back home. So they brought him home, and he said, then he heard the entire Bhagavatam. Based on that, not that he went, they said, okay, now listen, you have to hear first the first canto, then the second canto, then the third, and gradually after 15 years, it'll be the 10th canto. Immediately, in the first Bhagavatam class, he heard Sukadeva Goswami was 10th canto. And this Raskata, Krishna's beautiful sweet form in Vrindavan, Madhurya Rupam. Prema is Rupa Madhurya. And then he became attracted. So this is the power of 10th canto. It's somewhat, it's gushing waves of sweetness and attraction are rising and falling there. So anyone who happens to come under that shower of sweetness will become duly affected. Even a Brahmavadi, what to speak of someone who believes in the personality of God, actually believes in God as a person. God's the Father, and I'm a Catholic, and our Father who art in heaven, and be nice to us, and God is my Father. So that's a personal conception that Christians have. And you go, and then if they go in here, then they can very much make impression. But where the desire for sadhana bhakti does not grow, even after seeing the deities in the temple or listening to the divine pastimes of the Lord as described in 10th canto. But that inclination is caused by the instructions or, as he says, bidding of the scriptures. Such alone should be known as Vaidhi Bhakti. Make some more. So this is, he's describing here that the rag and Vaidhi, these are two types of sadhana. And raga is based on some taste, some ruchi, bhakti ruchite. Some spontaneous love, some ruchi, some liking for Krishna's form or the pastimes, then one begins to serve him. Now he gives some support from 2nd canto, chapter 1, verse 5. Tasmad bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishvaro hari Shotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyasche chatabhayam. Shukadev tells Parikshit, O King Bharat, one who aspires for the Supreme Lord Hari, from whom all fears of births and deaths are completely wiped out, should listen to and sing and meditate upon the glories of that all-powerful, all-majestic, indwelling Lord of all sentient beings. Commentary. Mukunda Das Goswami states that listening to, singing, and meditating on Hari should include directly his entourage as well. One who worships Hari but does not worship his devotees is only a vain person and not entitled to the grace of the Lord. So in our line of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we always worship Yugal Kishore, Radha and Krishna, Radha Govinda, Radha Madan Mohan. Because these deities were originally these main deities called Teen Prabhu. The Teen Prabhus of Vrindavan were originally installed by Bhadranav 5,000 years ago. And there was no Radha there. There's only Govindaji, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, Keshavaji, Daoji, Haridevji, and these are the main deities that were installed, and of course Gopishwar Mahadev, and other Shiva deities. But there was no Radharani there, there's no Shakti, only Shaktiman, only Purusha. Because he was advised, Vajranava was advised by Shandili Muni, Shandili Rishi and Garga Rishi and others that were here. And they said, you, Krishna is Bhagavan, he's Swayam Bhagavan, you just install him. Generally, this is a conception that other Vaishnavas, they don't so much emphasize the energy, but more the energetic. Krishna they emphasize. If they emphasize worship of Krishna, it's always Krishna with Rukmini. Can travel the length and breadth of India and you won't find anywhere deities of Radha and Krishna. Nowhere. All the ancient deities, even up to 500 years ago, the closest form you could find of Krishna was Rukmini Dwarkadish, or sometimes they say Dwarkadish. In Mathura there's Dwarkadish. So this Radha and Krishna, this worship of Radha Rani with Krishna was begun by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, Janamata. In our Vrindavan, Janamata brought Radharani here to join with Govindaji, Gopinath, and Madan Mohan. So, we very much emphasize the worship of Krishna with his Shakti and his entourage. Sometimes people, they only chant Radha Kripa Kataksha as a brata. And then they're chanting, oh Radharani, please, you know, be pleased with this prayer and bestow your mercy upon me. But our acharyas in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they say that when we chant this prayer glorifying Radharani, it attracts Krishna. Krishna comes. Like we go out in the forest and say, Radha, 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 Radha. Like we may go in front of someone's house and that there's some daughter living there, but she may be somewhere else. And we start saying the name of that daughter, Preeti, Preeti, Preeti or something. Then the father comes out. What are you saying? Why are you calling the name of my daughter? She's in college. Who are you? So he'll be attracted. He won't sit there and not respond. Oh, someone's calling. That's my daughter. Who is that? So in the same way, when we chant Radhe, 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 then Krishna comes. So then, but then where's Radharani? Well, if you want Radharani to come, then you have to chant Krishna's glories. So this is how the acharyas say that whenever we chant some prayer to Radharani, then we should also chant a prayer to Krishna. And then the very clever disciples, they ask the acharya, well, which one should we chant first? Should we chant Radha Kripa Kataksha and then Nanda Nandan Ashtakam? Or should we first chant Nanda Nandan Ashtakam and then Radha Kripa Kataksha? Then the acharya replies, it depends on who you want to see first. If you want to see Radharani first, then you chant Nanda Nanda Astakam. And then afterwards you follow that by Radha Kripa Kataksha. So first Radharani will come and then Krishna will come. But you can, don't try to worship only one alone, only prayers. I'll only chant prayers to Radharani. Some people have this idea. I'm a mantri, I only care about Radharani. I don't want to chant any prayers to Krishna. So then, but then you won't get Radharani, you'll just get Krishna. Radharani is, she's Lajeshwari, she's very shy, Laja. And if you call someone's name, any devotee will run the other way. If you call any materialist name, he'll run, he'll be there in a second. A devotee is opposite mentality. If you're glorifying him, he'll cover his ears and run away. Like Lord Chaitanya, when his associates were glorifying him, he would cover his ears and say, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, 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 Vishnu. When they would try to glorify him as God. Or, what is this? I'm only a devotee. I'm like you, I'm just another devotee. So that's the nature. So we say, Radhe, 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 Radhe. Then Krishna comes, what are these guys? They're jumping up and down, Radhe, Radhe. But there's no Krishna, 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 Krishna hate. So as far as sadhana goes, then we should always, we chant the Yuga mantra. Our Yuga mantra is Hare and Krishna. This is the Yuga mantra. And whenever we worship, then they should always be together. Although there's even one prominent follower, Nagori Math. He has a temple in Vrindavan. I think his name is Bharati. Bhakti something, Vigyan Bharati Maharaj or something. And he has a deity. He has some books in English about Radharani. He has a temple, and it's only Radharani in the temple. Big brass deity of Radharani. And many of the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they don't speak very highly of this idea of worshipping Radharani alone. So we should worship Krishna with his entourage. The commentator further points out that Sri Rupa Goswami himself has stated in connection with the practice of Rag Bhakti that a sadhaka should live in Braj, meditate on Krishna and his associates who are of the same nature and temperament and taste. In other words, the same nature and temperament and taste which we want to attain, the bhava and ruchi. Vishnu Chakravarti points out, Rupa Goswami has cited this verse from Bhagavatam as an example of Vaidhi Bhakti that is caused by injunction to the scriptures. One who is afraid of rebirth and takes to the worship of Hari because the scriptures have laid down that all fears will be completely wiped out if one worships Hari. So one who takes recourse to sadhana bhakti to get free from worldly fears because the scriptures have said so and not out of any spontaneous inclination for it follows Vaidhi Bhakti. So this is most everyone that... They're afraid of Yamaraj, or afraid of rebirth, or afraid of the threefold miseries of the material world. If you chant Hare Krishna, you'll be happy. This is the advertising. So yes, I want to be happy. So let me be happy by doing this activity. But bhakti is different motivation. So now he quotes a verse, a very popular verse from Padma Puran. Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismataravya Vishmatarvyo Jatuchit Sarve Vidhi Nicheda Suraitayor Eva Kinkaraha. Lord Vishnu is always to be meditated on and never to be forgotten. All other regulative principles of the scriptures are only servants of these two principal imperatives. That is, the constant daily remembrance of Vishnu is a positive rule, while never forgetting the Lord is the negative directive of the scriptures. And all other positive and negative prescriptions of the scriptures are only subservient to them. So this is, of course, again, further delineating some of the basics of Vaidhi Sadhana, which is along the same line of his introduction to this idea of sadhana in general. The main principle of sadhana is manoniveshayat. Manoniveshayat. Nivesh means like to enter, like pravesh, nivesh, that our minds should be completely entered into Krishna, should be completely absorbed in Krishna, either by vaidhi or by rag, however we come to Krishna. This is really what sadhana is all about. So now he's talking about the vidhi, vaidhi sadhana. It's a famous verse, Prabhupada says it, this verse so many times. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. The positive rule is remember Krishna, and the negative rule is don't forget him. And anything that will make you forget Krishna, then you reject. That's pratikulyena sankalpa, pratigulina varjanam. So we reject anything that's going to take us away from Krishna or make us forget Krishna, then that's to be forgotten or to be overlooked or rejected. And anything that will make us remember Krishna, we should accept that. Anukulina sankalp. Jiva Goswami comments that scriptures have prescribed that a Brahman must perform his daily ablutions, morning, noon, and evening. This is a positive injunction of Vidhi. A Brahman or a cow should not be killed. This is negative, prohibitory injunction. If one should follow the positive injunctions of scriptures, one will reap the beneficial fruits. If one should violate the prohibitions of shastras, one would suffer the consequences. All these positive and negative prescriptions of the scriptures are included in the major vidhi and nisheda. Nisheda means negative. That is, the regulative and prohibitive injunctions of that Lord Vishnu should be remembered and Lord Vishnu should not be forgotten. This means that all the fruitive results that have been assured by shastras from performing Vedic yajna and smarta rituals shall be attained automatically by performing the most important vidhi, daily remembrance of Vishnu, and all results that accrue from violation of all other nisheda directions of shastra will follow from the non-remembrance of Vishnu, which is the most important prohibitive injunction or nisheda of the scriptures. Vishnu Chakravarti points out that the word satatam should not mean constantly, but it is used in the sense of daily. Like he says, satatam Vishnu. In other words, how can you remember Krishna every moment? Because sometimes you have to sleep. Sometimes you have to go to the bathroom and this and that. So he means, it doesn't mean constantly, it means daily, every day. If the vidhi be constant remembrance of the Lord by an individual, which is not possible in a state of bondage, then such a vidhi, which will be impossible to obey, will lose its purpose. So this vidhi is given for everyone. So if someone who's still a bound soul, he has so many distractions from remembering Krishna, so that then how could he follow this rule? This rule would only be for someone who's liberated that could remember Krishna at every moment. So then, but this is a rule for everyone. So very interesting principle he's saying here is that there's so many do's and don'ts in the shastras, so many yamas and niyamas, unlimited, millions of them. And this is like the hole in one shot. I mean, it's, if you have $1 million and all your $10 problems are solved. So he said, this is it. Don't worry about all the rules and regulations. What do I do now? When do I eat the cow dung? You know, when do I eat the urine? And what about the, I don't know about this, you know, is it before this titi or after this titi? Or, so if you're busy in cow dung smaran and urine smaran, then this is not lila smaran, cow mutra smaran, cow gobert smaran. The real thing is that this makes it very easy. Well, whatever I'm doing right now, am I remembering Krishna? Am I thinking of Krishna or am I forgetting him? And if I'm remembering him, I'm doing sadhana and maybe vaidhi or rag. And if I'm forgetting him, then it doesn't matter how I'm forgetting him. I'm forgetting him. I'm forgetting him because I'm just watching the backside of this cow for the last half hour, and I'm waiting for this cow dung to fall into my cup. I'm chasing this cow all around the parking lot, or what do you call it, the pasture grounds, and pulling his tail, trying to get her to drop off, make some urine, and she just almost kicked me in the head, and I'm slipping and sliding all the cow dung in the pastures. And I spent 45 minutes, I finally got 5 drops of cow urine. But for the 45 minutes, I'm just meditating on cow urine and cow dung, and not Vishnu. So we have to try to be practical and realistic. Because I have the Padma Purana, I was just collecting my notes again, and it's describing all those things. I said, well, this isn't, if one cannot do this, then one can simply, eat once a day, eat. It says munifal and roots and munifal, which is the fruits that, like fruitarian diet or something, what the sages eat, fruits that sages eat. So this is a very important thing. We can always use this standard, whatever activity we're doing. Well, what am I doing now? And whatever I'm doing, am I remembering Krishna? Am I forgetting him? This is our standard of measurement. Now, ityaso syad vidhi nitya, vidhir nitya, sarva varna shamadishu, nityatve yasya nir nitam, ekadashyadivat phalam. The vidhi, that Vishnu is to be remembered daily, is an eternal and standing rule of the scriptures, which is applicable to all varnas and all ashramas. So it doesn't matter. It's not that, oh, this remembrance principle, this is only for Brahmanas, not for Shudras. Or this is only for Kshatriyas, not for, you know, or only for Brahmacharis, or only for Sannyasis, they should remember. But Brahmacharis are busy running around trying to get sweet rice. No, it's for everyone. This is for all the Varnas to remember. Though this vidhi is an eternal one, applicable to all under all circumstances and in all times, it is also fruit-giving like the observance of the Ekadasi fast. So the commentary. Various Vedic and Smarta Kamya karmas, Kamya means activities done to fulfill desires, have been prescribed for specific purposes, and they will bring the result, or fruit, of earthly or heavenly pleasures. But if one does not perform any such direction of the Shastra, one need not suffer any adverse effect for non-observance of such a directive. For example, the Vedas say that a Kshatriya king, if he performs an Ashwamedha Yajna, he will become the ruler of the earth. Or if you perform Putrasthi Yajna, you will be blessed with a son. But if one does not perform any of these Vedic directions, one does not suffer for its non-performance. But there are other vidhis, or positive directions of the scriptures, which become unconditionally binding on an individual, such as daily ablutions on the part of a Brahmin. If he performs his daily ablutions thrice in morning, noon, and evening, such a Brahmin does not gain any particular fruit. But should he neglect to carry it out, such obligatory vidhis, he will commit sins and thereby fall from the position of a Brahmin. So there's nothing really, because the Shastras say if you don't do this, if you don't take three baths a day or don't chant your anik three times a day, then you'll go to hell or you'll become a Shudra next life or dog eater. So then why? I gotta do Gayatri. I don't want to be a dog eater, you know. It's not a very good idea, you know. So they're just doing it because out of fear of the reprisal or the reaction of the Shastra, out of faith in the Shastra and out of fear of the future. But the actual activity of bathing itself does not give any pot, doesn't really necessarily mean you're connected with Vishnu or meditate, remembering Vishnu. So oftentimes, and when one's attached to these things, then it becomes an impediment to pure bhakti also, which we discussed earlier. If the abstention that is prescribed is not complied with, and one violates the prohibition by not abstaining from such acts, one must suffer the consequences. For example, the scriptures forbid killing a Brahmin or cow. If one should follow this direction, one does not gain anything in particular. In other words, if you don't kill a cow or a Brahmin, you don't get any benefit. But if you kill a cow or a Brahmin, you get a lot of sins on your head. You don't gain anything. But should anybody violate this directive, or you follow the rule, this vidhi of the Shastra, you don't get anything. But if you violate it, you get a lot, and you get knocked down. If you kill a cow, then you will incur sin and suffer the consequence. Such vidhis, do's and nishedas, don'ts, are unconditionally binding on all. The scriptures do not always mention the fruits of otherwise of such vidhi nisheda, do's and don'ts. Jiva says that the vidhi of remembering Vishnu daily and the nisheda of never forgetting him come under such permanent scriptural injunctions which are binding on all under all circumstances. They also implicitly bear permanent and lasting fruit. What is that? Bhakti. In other words, if you're always remembering Vishnu and never forgetting him, then by that remembrance, bhakti will be pleased and reside in the heart. just as the binding vidhi of the observance of Ekadasi bears the fruit of bhakti. So it's often said in the Ekadasi Mahatmya, anyone observes this Ekadasi, devotion to the Lord will arise. Of course, that sounds like a cause and effect. When we said that bhakti is independent, bhakti is surup shakti, bhakti is transcendental, bhakti is not caused by anything, there's nothing we can do to cause bhakti to come. But even the Shastras will say, anyone who stays up and performs Hari Jagran, stays up all night on Ekadasi, then he will get devotion to the Lord. So it means he will become eligible, because it's Hari Vastra, the Lord is pleased, but still it's in his hand. We please the Lord, and this, you can get Hari Bhakti this way, but it's, the activity itself is not the sole cause. So it's not patent or standard that if I do this Ekadasi, definitely I'll get devotion. You may or you may not. Because it's free will. Bhakti is free will, because it's Krishna's free will, it's Krishna's energy, his Sarup Shakti, his Icha Shakti. He may give, he may not. But in the past, many people have done Ekadasi Brat, and many people have done Kartik Brat, and many people have spent 2 or 3 days in Braj, and they receive bhakti. And so that's why it says, anyone who comes to Vrindavan for a few hours, he will get Hari Bhakti. That's there in Mahatmyam, Padma Puran, and Mathura Mahatmyam. So that's because Krishna's free will. Oh, you came to my place and you behave very nicely, I'm going to reward you. He may reward. Some people come, they don't get bhakti. Some people come, they get bhakti. So everyone's coming. So if it was cause and effect, everyone who comes should get bhakti. But they don't. So it's not you can't cause it. It's in Krishna's hand. So, Jiva Goswami further points out that it would be more appropriate if this particular verse of Rupa in the text had been used after the fruits assuring references that have followed hereafter. In the case, the conclusion has been stated first, which has been followed by supporting references about the subject itself. Vishnu says that a nitya vidhi, directions of the scriptures for daily performance, is that which is binding on all, and neglect of which results in sins. When Rupa establishes the daily remembrance of Vishnu as a daily vidhi, or nitya vidhi, it follows that one will commit sin by not remembering the Lord daily. Mukunda Das Goswami points out that other human beings, besides those that come under varna and ashrama, are not excluded. The word adi in this phrase or verse of Rupa indicates that all human beings come under this vidhi of daily remembering the Lord. Because someone might say, well, listen, I'm not born in India, because only in India there's a varna ashrama system. You may find some loose divisions of society in other places because Krishna's made the world like that. But the actual varna ashrama system is only intact to some extent and only operating in India, no other country of the world. With all these yagyas and pujas and samskaras and all these things which are part of varnashram. Although you will find intelligent people and political people and warrior people and farmer people and traders and sutras, intellectuals, you find these people all around. So someone might say, well, I'm not born in India, I'm not part of the varnashram system, so I don't have to, this vidhi is not binding on me that I always have to remember Krishna and never forget him. I can still be quite all right without it. So Mukunda Das says that how could it be appropriate on the part of Rupa to cite the example of Ekadashi, which bears fruits, and support the vidhi of remembering Vishnu, which also implicitly bears permanent fruits. Here's the answer. As from the knowledge of the transitoriness of an earthen pot or a golden ornament, one can deduce that the conclusion as regards to the transitoriness of this phenomenal world, so also one may conclude, remembrance of Vishnu also bears the fruit of bhakti from the knowledge of the fact that Ekadashi fast, which is in remembrance of the Lord, bears the permanent fruit of bhakti. The comparison is quite in order. So Rupa Goswami is saying that this rule of Bhagavatam, that one should always remember the Lord and never forget him, he'll be rewarded. he'll be rewarded by remembering the Lord always. Just like if one observes Ekadasi, which is Hari Vasara, the day of Hari, the scriptures say that one who observes the day of Hari by trying to remember the Lord throughout the day, he'll be rewarded with bhakti. So any type of remembrance will give a result, or the fruit of that remembrance of Vishnu will be devotion or bhakti, if the Lord chooses to give. That always has to be there. So now next verse. Yata ekadashe tu vyaktame mavevoktam. Well, there's much, that's just the introduction. Mukhavarupadepadya purushasya shramai saha chatvaro jagnire varna guner vipradaya pritak. This is from 11th canto, 27th chapter, sloka 2 and 3. Oh, that's interesting. There's no shloka, there is no translation. Let's see here. Oh, it's all goes together. It's combined with the next one. Okay, now next one. Ya esham purusham sakshat atma prabhava mishvaram navajan yavajananti stanat vrashta patantyada. This is two verses, as I mentioned. So here, King Nimi is being addressed by the sages. They say to King Nimi, if the brahmanas and the other four varnas together with their respective qualities and the four ashrams who separately originated from the mouth, arms, thigh and feet of the Virata Purusha Vishnu respectively, if they do not worship the Lord out of any disrespect, they will fall down from the respective place of varna and ashram. So he's explaining how much important is this principle of always remembering Krishna or Vishnu and never forgetting him. Then he's citing this verse from Bhagavatam that if you don't do it, then you get react. If you're a Brahmin and you don't do your remembrance of the Lord, if you don't remember the Lord, then your next life you become a Shudra. Vishnu Chakravarti points out that in order to establish the fact of one's fall down into the mire of this world or down to hell for non-worship of the Lord, it is first stated that Vishnu is the supreme object of worship, who is the original father of all living beings, and not only the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, who originate from the Lord's mouth, arm, thigh, and feet. In other words, in the Vrata Rup, from creation, they say the Brahmanas emanate from the mouth of the Lord. That's why they say that the Brahmanas, they speak and they eat on behalf of Lord Vishnu. And the Kshatriyas emanate from the arms of the Lord, because they engage in protection with their sword and bow and arrow. They protect people. As the arms protect the body, the Kshatriyas protect the social body. So they emanate from the Lord's arms. And then the Vaishyas emanate from the belly of the Lord, because they produce food, and food goes in the belly, and so food is the energy source. So energy, money is energy, food is energy. So Vaishyas are in charge of money and food. They do banking and commerce and food and trading and all these things. So the belly is the source of the energy for the body. So the Vaishyas are the source of energy for the society. Sometimes they rip off everybody else. And then the Shudras are the society is resting on, the body is resting on the feet. So the Shudras emanated from the feet of the Virata Rup, Lord Vishnu. Because they're the foundation. The foundation of society is humble and submissive laborers. Work has to be done. The Vaishyas own the fields, but the Shudras work there. If someone works in the fields, it doesn't mean he's a Vaishya. He's a farmer. He's plowing the fields. Oh, he's a Shudra. He's Shudra, he's just digging the ground and planting the seeds. That's actually Shudra. He's a laborer. So laborers are carrying the bags of money for the Vaishyas, and the laborers are collecting the wood for the Brahmins. And so Shudras are assisting all the three Varnas. So they're considered to be the feet or the foundation. So, but to not worship the Lord is itself a disrespect or disregard to Him. Just as not to show proper respect to a respectable person is showing him disrespect, so also not to worship Vishnu is a clear sign of showing disrespect to Him, and hence the result would be fall down from one's status in life. So, in so many ways, Rupa Goswami is trying to say that in human life, human form of life, bhakti is for everyone. That sadhana bhakti, which is based on remembering Lord Vishnu and not forgetting Him, this is the duty of everyone. Whatever your varna or ashram is, everyone in human life, even their outside varna ashram, everyone in human life is meant to remember God and not forget Him. And if we don't do that, if we forget God, then we'll be punished, because we'll go against the scriptures and commit sinful activity. Or if we don't remember God, then we'll fall down to some lower species of life. Brahma becomes a Shudra becomes an animal. So then he cites more from 11th canto. Evam kritya yoga pate puman vaidika tantrike archan anubhayata siddhim matto vinda tabi. Bipsitam. 11:27:49. Krishna speaking to Uddhav, Uddhav Gita. O Uddhav, those who worship me with Vedic and Tantric rituals are blessed by me with their desired ends, both on earth and heaven. So here he's trying to show that no matter what you want to do, no matter what your varna ashram is, you should remember Krishna or Vishnu, should worship Him. And Krishna Himself is telling Uddhava that, so He's showing this. And there's also the famous verse in 2nd canto, Akama Sarva Kamova Moksha Kamo Dharidi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajata Purusham Pashu Yajata Purusham Pashu. He says everyone should worship the Lord, whether full of desires or free from desires. There's no one else to be worshipped. So Jiva Goswami explains, this reference has been cited by Rupa to signify if by mere Vedic and Tantric rituals one can attain pleasures, earthly or heavenly, how much better would it be to follow the path of bhakti and engage oneself in worship of the Lord, in whose worship not only all conceivable earthly and heavenly pleasures can be attained, but much more in the realm of the Lord Himself. So Rupa Goswami is saying, if you want anything material, you can get it by worshiping the Lord. But why be so foolish? Because the material things are temporary and limited, and they have to come to an end. You have to take another birth and start again. So worshiping the Lord is so powerful that you can get anything and everything. Why not worship Him just to please Him without any material motivation? And then He'll bring you to His kingdom so you can live eternally there serving Him. If one is an ardent and desireless devotee of the Lord, this is a translation of this verse, Akama Sarva Kamova, or if one aspires after all pleasures in heaven and earth, or one seeks liberation, or moksha, by emerging in the Absolute, one who is truly wise will certainly follow the path of pure bhakti and intensely serve the Lord. So someone will read the Vedas and see that Krishna can be easily pleased by the execution of bhakti, which is not very difficult. Shravana Kirtan Vishnu Smaran is a pretty easy path. But if you want to get material things by worshipping Shiva or Brahma, the path of Karma Kanda is intense austerities, as you see Hiranyakashipu was doing, or Brikasura offering your flesh into the fire, or standing on one leg and for thousands of lifetimes, simply to get some material powers. And Krishna is saying, why you go to the demigods? Why not come to me? I'm the prime minister. Why are you going to the minister of finance? You come to me, I can give you the whole treasury. I'm the prime minister. So those that are smart, as we said, if you're smart, that if you have intelligence, no matter what you want, worship Krishna. Then he'll give you those things. He will give you those things. And he'll give you those objects in a very special way. He'll give you material fruits and material objects. And you'll get those material things. And he'll give with you, along with giving you the material object, Krishna will give you the sense of detachment. Because you're worshipping him, you're actually performing bhakti to attain the material object. Sarvakama udaridi. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Tivrena bhakti yogena. You're very intensely performing bhakti, which is easy, to get something that you want, sarvakama, whatever your desire is. And then, because you're contacting bhakti, there's vairagya there. So you get the fruit of your worship. You get the big car, the big house, or whatever. But along with it comes this feeling, wow, must be something more. So this vairagya will come. So Krishna will give, along with giving you the material object, he'll give you an inborn distaste for it. And after a few times of worshipping him, getting material things, you'll get disgusted. You say, why am I asking Krishna for these things? Somehow I feel detached from these things. Well, Krishna is very tricky. That because he loves the jivas and he wants to ultimately give himself and give his love to the jivas, he tricks them because they're like children. They won't take the medicine unless you say it's candy. Unless you sugarcoat the medicine or say, look, you take this medicine, I'll give you a lollipop. So in Krishna's case, the lollipop is built into the medicine. It's not a separate thing. So when you do the puja and worship of Krishna, you get the material thing, but inside you get the lollipop, which is the sweetness of Krishna, which far exceeds any sweetness of material objects or goals or attainments. But you worship any demigod, it's just business. You do this and you get that. They won't give you any vairagya, they won't give you any bhakti. You just worship them, which is a type of bhakti. And they say, okay, take this thing, get out from here, I don't want to see you again. Take this power, take this planet, take this thing, leave me alone. And then what happens is these worshippers always get the demigods in trouble. They always get in trouble and then they have to pray to Krishna to get them out of trouble. And they get entangled with their worshippers. They get some, it's a bad result. So if one is intelligent, he won't go that way. Surarshe vihita shastre harimudishya yakriya saiva bhakti riti prokta taya bhakti parabhavit. In Pancharatra it says, O sage among gods, O Narad, whatever practices have been prescribed by the scriptures in relation to Hari are called sadhana bhakti, by which parabhakti or prema bhakti is attained. This is the highest fruit of Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, as commented by Sri Jiva and Sri Chakravarti. Very fast. So next verse. So it's just further encouragement that don't do anything else. Just do bhakti, because ultimately bhakti will bring us to prema bhakti. There's no other way to get there. Then this next verse. Yakena yati bhagena jata shradosya sevane nati sakto navairagya bhagasya madikarasyo. Now we were talking about Vaidhi Bhakti, and the main rule of sadhana bhakti is to remember the Lord, don't forget him. No matter what you want, follow the Lord, this will be good. Now he talks about the eligibility for Vaidhi. One who has a supreme fortune of faith and bhakti in the Lord, and who is neither too much attached to worldliness or too much detached from it, is eligible for this Vaidhi Bhakti. So we'll read this verse tomorrow, and we'll look at the 11th canto also. A very interesting purport there, that if you're too much attached, you can't become a devotee. If you're too much detached, you can't become a devotee. You have to be middle road, average guy. A little bit lusty, but not too lusty. And a little bit detached, but not too detached. normal guy, but that's rare. It's really rare. Most people are all weirdos, perverts, and all kinds of strange attractions and interests. Just to find a guy that likes girls and doesn't like boys, and or likes only girls, not boys and girls. I mean, it's very hard. It's Kali Yuga. Everyone's got some quirks in their brains. So they won't be very good candidates for bhakti. I remember one devotee he joined. His name was Ramashriya, the godbrother. And he was from San Francisco when he joined the temple and seemed like a nice guy. And he was brahmachari. We were all brahmacharis together, going on book distribution, Harinam, this and that. Then one time he blooped, he disappeared. Then on a Sunday feast, and this lady came with these big glasses, and you know, like same kind of glasses that Ramashri used to have. And she was like a lady, and kind of a heavy voice and big hands. And then we were sitting serving the feast out. We said, I said, "Are you Ramashriya?" And he said, "Yeah." So Ramashriya was like a transvestite, you know. He was a man, but he really liked being a lady more. So he still had some staiba for prasadam after living in a temple for a couple of years, and so he couldn't give up that prasadam. So he came back for the Sunday feast, but not as a brahmachari, but as a lady, Brahmacharini or whatever. And then we said, "What happened?" He said, "No, I was like this before, but somehow I got Prabhupada's books and I got convinced I should try to be normal, but I couldn't be normal because I'm abnormal." So it's like this, you know, these kind of people exist all around the place. So we've seen a hands-on, you know, eyewitness type of thing. So we'll hear tomorrow about this. Bhakti is for the average guy and the average girl. Not for these extraordinary nutcases. Extraordinary nutcases of Kali Yuga. Is she dash oblique he? Is she in the movement? I can't say because I moved away from the movement. I mean, from here to San Francisco is a long way. So I've been 20 years in India. So, and even I left the West Coast, I was serving the East Coast after 1981. So I can't say where he or she is. But this is Kali Yuga. So any questions or comments on today's discussion about sadhana bhakti? And he's just preparing the runway to take off on describing the 64 limbs of Vaidhi Bhakti, which also apply to Raghunuga Sadhana. So, the essence of Sadhana Bhakti is fixing the mind on and thinking of Krishna. Well, that's what we heard this morning. You know, the Guru's main duty is to help the disciple do this. So that's what the Guru, because the Guru wants to arrange us, our lives, or help us, so give us some way or methodology by which we can always remember Krishna and never forget him. So we have a phrase in English, an idle mind is a devil's workshop. So if the mind is idle and does not have anything to think about or something constructed to do, then it will produce destructive thoughts, which will lead us into destructive activities, which will take us away from Krishna and further into Maya or illusion. So the Guru he's always trying to find the ways and means to positively and progressively, in a tasty way, engage his disciple in devotional works or activities according to the nature of that disciple, which traditionally the Guru would know very clearly because every Guru was a Jyotishi. So every Guru would cast the Janma Kundali of his disciple in the Gurukul and then engage him accordingly, according to his psychophysical nature. And that way the brahmachari or student would be quite happily engaged because he was doing what he likes best. And then the Guru told him, "Okay, you do this electric wiring and all this electronic work, but you chant Hare Krishna. Or you listen, I'll be playing lectures in the ashram, so you try to fix your mind in these lectures. And after your day's service, we'll meet and we'll discuss, I'll ask you questions on the basis of what you heard on those tapes or the loudspeakers. So therefore, you're engaging in your propensity, but at the same time, you're connected with Krishna, because the Guru is engaging you, and you're happy. So Prabhupada was very expert at that. We didn't know what our propensity was, actually. Our propensity was to eat and sleep, mate and defend. But Prabhupada said, this is not very productive, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So get out there and take these books and run around the parking lot and or lay out these books and do this puja and build this temple. And so devotees did everything. And knowing that we were pleasing Prabhupada, always remembering Prabhupada, we're always remembering our Guru. I'm doing this for Prabhupada, I'm doing this for Prabhupada, I'm doing this for Prabhupada, and Krishna, and Prabhupada, and Krishna, and Prabhupada, and Krishna. And this way we were making a lot of advancement, because we were thinking of the pure devotee and the Lord simultaneously. And the devotees that did that, they're still here. And now they're leaders and gurus themselves, because they purely followed the process of sadhana bhakti, which means to engage in some activity and remember the Lord. So the gurus, that's what they do. Their main duty is to help the disciple do this. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he stressed Hare Krishna Kirtan as the best type of sadhana, because it is the most effective method to fix the mind on Krishna. And because he was asked that directly in Chaitanya Bhagavat, the disciples and followers came from Bengal, and they said, Mahaprabhu, there's so many forms of devotional service. It's unlimited. It's actually unlimited. But what is the easiest, most effective way to actually make spiritual progress, the most powerful and effective way, which is easy and helps us fix our mind on Krishna so we never forget him? And he said, Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan, that's the best way. Engages all the senses, ears, mind, hands, everything. And this is the most powerful form of sadhana. And it's also repeated in Sandarvas and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Everyone, all the acharyas following the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they stress this point, that this is, because oftentimes people say, well, what should I do? Should I spend my time reading all day, or should I do kirtan? Should I make garlands? Should I sell books or do food for life? Or go out to Taiwan and sell Korean paintings? Or go to Korea and sell Taiwan paintings? Or go to South America? So we can do any number of things, but kirtan should be there with it. This is what Jiva Goswami's very brilliant contribution was. Okay, do all these things, but with kirtan. Or just do kirtan. And he even went to the extent that if you're doing anything else and without kirtan, that will not be acceptable to the Lord. Even if you're doing puja and so much archan, but there's no kirtan there with it, and you're not chanting the Lord's name along with it, that will not actually be acceptable and pleasing to the Lord. He went to that extent, Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Sundarva. So, as I told that small anecdote when I was taking out the trash in Los Angeles and just pushing around the trash cans and things, and they said, oh, you're not doing bhakti. You're a garbage man. So if you want to do bhakti, you have to become a transcendental garbage man. I said, oh, how do you become a transcendental garbage man? He said, you have to connect yourself with transcendence, not just with trash. You're just thinking and looking at trash, but you have to be thinking and looking at Krishna. And the easiest and best way to do that is to chant his holy name. So take out the trash and continually chant Hare Krishna, and you'll become a transcendental garbage man. So we did that, and then we got rewarded to become a transcendental toilet cleaner. And then we were rewarded for that to become a transcendental potato peeler. And then we became a transcendental book distributor. So many people are distributing books. Encyclopedia Britannica, World Book, this, that, Life Magazine, Newspaper Boys are distributing so many garbage things. But they're not transcendental. So if I'm only distributing books and not chanting and speaking about Krishna and glorifying Krishna, then I'm not transcendental. So these two types of sadhana, this is a review, Vaidhi sadhana, which is regulated practice, and Raghunuga, which is spontaneous devotional practice, and that's how Prabhupada describes it. The main distinction is their source of inspiration. Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, the inspiration comes from a natural attraction to do or perform devotional service. In Vaidhi bhakti sadhana, there is no such attraction, so one relies on another source of inspiration, What is that source of inspiration? The orders of Shastra and Guru. And Srila Prabhupada explains that on page 22, Nectar Devotion. So, I should stop there. Rupa Goswami Pada Ki Jaya.